Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, present the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2025. Today, Foundations of Finance. I apologize for that delay. These computers are being very difficult with us, but
we should be okay now.
As I had told you on the first lecture, every day begins with looking at the numbers. And in the first few lectures, make sure that you're writing down terminology. Eventually, you will get to the point where you are comfortable with the way I am talking. But at first, it is kind of opaque, the language that I use in some regards. And this is tiny lettering here. Let me see if I can get this a little bigger for everyone to see, and especially for me. Okay, first things first. And some of this is actually part of the core lecture too. I will use some terminology that is in chapter one, chapter two, and all of that. So this is an intermixing of practical, real-world stuff with textbook and abstract definitions. The first thing is when I talk about the markets. There are many different kinds of markets, and a thorough understanding would be beyond a thorough coverage. But when I say markets, I could be referring to many different kinds of markets. You go to the market to get food. You go to another kind of market to get a loan. You go to another kind of market to get a house. There are all kinds of different markets. So when I say let's look at the markets, I'm specifically referring to one type of market. We have physical versus financial. Now, when I'm talking about the markets, for now, I'm talking about financial markets. When I say, let's look at the numbers, I'm looking at financial markets. And there are several different kinds of financial markets. Financial markets, there are bonds, stocks, and then these odd animals, ETFs, mutual funds. I could be talking about commodities markets, currency markets. Now, we will explore some of these, matter of fact, almost all of them, at one point or another in the course. But it's better, and you'll see this more and more, when I bring up terminology and concepts very loosely in normal conversation, and then later I begin to fill in the details, get more definitional with them. It makes it more comfortable for you to learn what I'm talking about in these regards. And for this, what I'm talking about, now, by the way, there are a lot of other kinds of markets too. There are, for example, spot versus forward markets, and I'll get into those. Versus forward markets. And there are other kinds of markets as well that I could lay out for you here. But for now, we're talking about markets that are financial. And in this regard, the first thing that I want to get on the table is the difference is broad measures of markets. There are these animals, these things called exchanges. These are where many, many stocks and bonds and other types of instruments, securities, are traded. These are exchanges. Your best idea of one might be, you see those, maybe these images or videos of people yelling and screaming, throwing papers and trading and yelling in open outcry systems. That's an exchange. That exchange would be a physical exchange. The best example of that would be the New York Stock Exchange that you would know of. Now, all over the world, there are exchanges. And in other countries, they are often called, not exchanges, they're called bourses, B-O-U-R-S-E-S. There is a bourse in Switzerland. There's a bourse in France. There are a bunch of these bourses around the world. We have the term exchange for them. This is a physical exchange. There's a platform, and there is basically an open outcry system, where someone is yelling, I need 600 shares of stock, and I am going to look for 5340 or better. And someone says, I've got 200 shares. Someone over here says, I got 400 shares. I can fill in your gap. But I can't take better. I won't take anything less than 5360. Are we in business here? That kind of exchange, just yelling at each other, or having electronics do it in front of you. Another kind of exchange is the electronic exchanges. The best example of that is the NASDAQ, the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotations. That is electronic. Now, these have been around forever. When I was running a penny stock house, the NASDAQ, I had a screen. This was back before people knew that there was something called the internet, but it was still electronic, where I would post, I've got someone who wants to sell 400 shares of some penny stock. And then there would be market makers. They'd see it on their screens. And if they wanted some of it, they might come in and eventually maybe clear the order. A bunch of them would. But that's an electronic exchange. Now, the New York Stock Exchange, these are mostly very large companies. It costs a lot first to get on it, and it costs a lot to stay on it because you have to do all this reporting. You pay the fees and all this kind of stuff, and they scrutinize you. The NASDAQ, not always, it's small companies, mostly scrappy, small-cap companies that are on the NASDAQ. Now, there are some enormous companies. They started out small decades ago, and they just decided they were going to stay there, sort of like giants in this woodland of dwarves, as it were. But one way you can tell, if it's on the NYSE, it would have a trading symbol that is one, two, or three letters, like F. That's four. Well, at one letter, that's NYSE. Microsoft, MSFT, well, that is four letters. That would be a NASDAQ listing. Tesla, TSLA, that's four letters, and it's huge companies, but they're still there on the NASDAQ. But you also get a lot of smaller cap companies, mRNA, Moderna, just I'm almost blanking. There are so many of them out there. PSI, IL, Cilium. There are a lot of companies that are on the NASDAQ. The thing you'll see is that risk and volatility are intimately related. Higher risk stocks, portfolios, and exchanges are going to move more. They're going to react more. And what do they react to? The only thing they react to is information. And if the information is more than a few seconds, a few minutes old, it's over. That's already in the price of the stock. It is minute-to-minute reactions to whatever is out there. These traders are, and I've been there, and I have my former students there. They care about the moment. They are like sharks running in an ocean by the hundreds of thousands, just grabbing whatever is there to eat and forgetting about it the next second. So if you think you can find something about the future price of a stock by looking at historical information, you are wrong. We love to get you people to do that kind of stuff because you're going to be chasing what we've already considered, and it's gone now. That's how markets work. They are highly efficient in absorbing and reacting to information. And I'll show you in the charts as it is happening in real time. Okay, now let me bring up something else. A lot of my focus is on U.S. activity, but this is a global economy. We have certain people who are now trying to turn off the rest of the world so we can live in our little hidey hole. We cannot. This is a global system with more than a quadrillion dollars swirling in any given day in these markets across the planet. And I'll talk about that in a minute too. So there are all these other exchanges all over the world. But I want to bring up a distinction. Oftentimes, this is Yahoo. Now, this is not all that great, but I can't take you behind a paywall because you could see my account numbers, and then you'd be hacking my site and playing with my trading. So I have to just sort of show you an open site. And like I said, this is not always all that reliable, but here we are. Let me show you this. Index portfolios. Or indexes. This is not an exchange. Oftentimes, an exchange is so freaking big that you can't really see the whole thing. So what we do is we take a sample of stocks from that exchange that are a good representation of the overall behavior of the exchange, and we look at that instead. So for example, look right up there. You see that right here, the Dow 30. That is 30 of the largest companies on earth, the giants of the earth. They're monopolies or oligopolies. What this portfolio of 30 stocks, this index, represents is the market's reaction for the huge companies of the earth to current information. And as you can see right now, the Dow 30 is up 0.18%, and that's another thing to keep in mind. We don't give a rat's ass about absolute numbers, dollars and cents. What matters is percentage movements. Think about it this way. You've got a stock that's $10, it goes up by a dollar, that's a 10% gain. But you've got that same dollar rise in a $100 stock, that's only a 1%. So talking about numbers is really kind of trivial for a lot of things. So when you hear these talking heads, well, the Dow went down 5,000 points today. Well, so yeah, so what was that percentage? Well, that was about 1%. Yeah, okay. You see, the percentages are all that matter to us in a lot of situations. So I can see that the Dow lost or gained about 0.18%. And I can see now that's 30 stocks. Now here's one, the S&P 500. That is 500 very, very large companies. Matter of fact, those 500 have so much of the market cap of the world in them that we can consider basically the world portfolio. About 65% of the total world's ownership value is in those 500 companies. That's a little scary that there are 500 companies essentially constitute that much of the wealth of the entire world. So we look at that one as more or less the overall market. Now these are very big companies, mostly monopolistic competitors, if you remember that term, and I'll bring that up to you again. Maybe I'll have a chance in this lecture to bring that up again. Okay, we're good here. Okay, so now let's look at another one. Well, wait a minute. Here is the Russell 2000. You can't see the whole thing. That's 2,000 stocks. This one, you won't see me pay any attention to. It's kind of a mishmash of stocks. But if I look at the Dow 30, its reaction tells me whatever is going on in terms of economic information, this is what its impact is being assessed as by traders on the very largest companies of the world. When I look at the behavior of the S&P 500, I'm looking more at the impact on the very large companies of the world, more or less constituting what the world's reaction is. And then here we go, look at this one. the NASDAQ, the whole exchange is actually quoted there. This would show, for the most part, whatever information is out there, this is a trader's reaction to it, as it would impact the small companies of the world, or at least of the United States. But you notice that there are other ones here too. Here's how it works. The first one I would want is the Nikkei 225. That's 225. That's an index portfolio, theoretical portfolio, of 225 representative companies of the stock exchange in Tokyo. Okay, so it's trading in Tokyo. That's the sun is up there. We're in bed. We're asleep. So this is what's happening on the other side of the world. Now, as the sun sets on Tokyo, it begins to rise across Eastern Europe. And then the markets begin to wake up and open in Europe. Now, there's one here. Where's Euro? The Euro in... Is that the one I want? Well, this is the one I want. This is sort of an index of a bunch of companies from across the Eurozone. So it's measuring the European economic reactions to the information of the moment. And it's now, of course, this one, the Japanese, they've gone to bed. Their market is closed. Where the heck was that? Oh, clear down here at the bottom. So you can see that they were down for the day. But notice that actually what happened was there was negative information that was impacting early on, and once that information was passed, there's nothing to push the market up or down, so it just floated from there into the closing bell. And then the sun set in Tokyo and it rose in Europe, and as you can see, it was a push-pull kind of thing. The opening bell dropped, and then it began to climb back out of it. And by the end, it was just pretty much they were tired and there was some bad information and it closed down. As the sun was getting lower in the sky in Europe, it was rising in London with the Financial Times index of 100 representative companies of the London Exchange. And as you can see, it was getting pumped with information up, up, up. Good information, positive information all through the day. Now, two terms. Negative, down, that is bearish. Positive, up, that's bullish. So you can be bearish on the entire market. You can be bearish on a stock. You can be bullish on a market. You can be bullish on a stock. So if I looked at the S&P 500 overall for today, and it's not quite closed yet. The closing bell is in a little while, I think. Yeah. Was this a bull or a bear day for the S&P 500? Say it.
Bear,
yes. And if it's a bull, you say bull. You don't say bull. You say bull. Okay? And so we can see that overall, if you look at the Dow, well, the Dow was peed itself up about 0.12%. It's actually beginning to lose its momentum upward now. But if you look over here, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, there was generally a somewhat bearish sentiment in the market today. Generally bearish today. Now, it changes from day to day. Bull one day, bear one day. As you can see, at the beginning, the S&P 500 had a bear run. Do you see that drop in the spark chart there? Right in here. Right here. Where the hell was that? Oh, here we go. Do you see how the bears were winning in the early trading hour, about an hour, 2 hours, and then the bulls began to pull in. Do you see how the market started pulling back up through there? In other words, there were more buy orders than sell orders, so on net, the unbalanced volume was toward the buy side, and it was crawling back up through the day. It never really got. There was another bull run there at the end, but it wasn't enough to break through the opening price. So it finished down for the day, but with bullish sentiment beginning to take hold and pull the market up. And then the closing bell, ding, 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 and it was over. That means it's over officially. However, aftermarkets still trade, and then in the morning, pre-markets are still trading. You don't see that activity until the opening bell. So if there is trading on the, let's say there's bullish trading before the bell, in the pre-markets, it's bullish on a stock. What'll happen is at the opening bell, suddenly you'll see the new opening price is well above where it was when it closed the night before. That was the aftermarket and pre-market orders building, and the balance, if it popped, the balance was toward buy orders, which are filled in the first 5 minutes or so as the liquidity builds on the market makers. Now, I'm using a lot of terminology here. You'll get used to it, and it will begin to get into your blood. My whole objective here is to get you to the point where you don't have to listen to some talking head on TV or some blogger telling you how to invest. You can see it for yourself. You know what's going to happen for yourself. At least you can do as much prediction as anyone else can. So as I look at this across here, we are not at the end of the day yet. And as you can see, the Dow has actually, the bulls have pulled it into positive territory, at least a little bit. I mean, this is not a spectacular day. Look, if the markets are changing less than about 0.2%, 0.25%, that's really not much of anything. You catch our attention when you get up above about a third of a percent, 0.33, or down 0.33. Anything else less than that is in absolute value is really, that was just playtime. Let me take you here a little further into this, and I'm going to do this every day with you, and it will get into your bones, and usually by the end of the semester, when you're asked in the course evaluation, what was your favorite part of the course, almost everyone says it was let's look at the markets, because you begin to like to see this activity, and it's happening day and night. And every one of the traders there on the floors of the exchanges or in their electronic cubicles, they are out just to make a buck. And understand this, and I'll show you this later in the course. It doesn't matter whether it's a bull market or a bear market, a bullish stock or a bearish stock. You can make money off it any way you want. If it's going down, I can make money as easily as I can if it's going up. And the entire name of the game is that I am in that pit, and everyone else in those pits who is a survivor is there to take your lunch money. I have lots better things to do with it than you do. So if you step into that world and you think that you're a genius because you made some money on Robinhood or you made some money on Bitcoin or some other scam, we're there to take that money away from you as soon as we've got you hooked. We're going to give you free crack until you need it so bad that you'll give us your soul for it. That's how it works in my world. And that's why, I'm such a nice guy. Now, let me take you down here. I'm going to show you some commodities. Crude oil. Crude oil is just sort of like a composite. There are all kinds of crude oil. I used to be in oil and gas in Texas. I was a wildcatter. I wasn't a landman, but I worked with landmen. The oil you pull out of those wells is, at least the ones we got, was this thick, stinking, hot sludge. Sour crude. That's fine. That's what we, that's all good, all wonderful, The whole thing, though, was that there were other grades, up to light, sweet Brent crude. This oil that comes out of the ground in Saudi Arabia that looks so good, you could almost turn it into gasoline. You could almost put it into your car and drive it. It's so close to gasoline. But whatever crude that is being pulled out of the ground, that is refined in these giant cracking towers into hydrocarbon products. The one you're most familiar with is gasoline. That's about 50% of the crude oil is turned into gasoline for your cars. And different grades of gasoline, which really, for most cars, it doesn't matter whether you get 93 or 87. Back down from there, you have what are called the distillates, which would be kerosene, jet fuel, diesel fuel. That's the distillates. That's about 25% of, maybe around 25% of that oil coming out of that barrel, coming out of the ground, is turned into distillates. Now below that are the dregs. Those are turned into everything from plastics to lipstick to pharmaceuticals to asphalt. Every last drop of that oil is turned into something. And so if you are in this mind that we are going to turn into a green economy, no more carbon footprint, and we'll get these wind turbines and these ocean things and the geothermal, dream on. We can't. Every time I work in the wind turbine sector, those roads, those giant towers, the cranes, everything in there is done with oil. And the problem is we're running out, 50 years at best. And the last of the oil is going to cost a fortune to pull, and we're going to pull it out of the most environmentally sensitive areas you could imagine. But we will not let go, we can't let go of oil for a long, long time. And we may collapse as a civilization before we can get away from our addiction to oil, which has been going on for well more than a century and a half now. But that's just the reality of it. So we watch these crude prices. Right now, crude is quite low. It's at about let me look here. See, here's Brent. Brent is sweet crude. And it's going to be more expensive than the average crude out there. But you can kind of track them both. You can see that they're both going up a little bit today, but they're actually on the low side. Good for you. That means low gasoline prices. Because the input is low, the prices of the output will be low. Now, the gasoline price can fluctuate more than the price of the oil, because sometimes there's a shortage of diesel, so they have to transfer some production from gasoline to diesel or to jet fuel, so that would make the price of the diesel go down, but it would make the price of the gasoline go up. So there's not a one-for-one, this goes up, gas goes up, or this goes down, gas goes down. It has to do with supply and demand dynamics in the overall usage of fossil fuels. However, you can see that these are going up, but they're still low. The sweet spot for oil, maybe about 76 to 82, 83. We don't want gasoline prices too, we don't want oil prices too low. Because what that's going to do is it's going to make a lot of the producers stop looking for oil. Why would I be producing oil? Why would I be digging new wells and all that expense of punching into them, doing the sideways and the workouts and the fracking, if it's only going to get me a little bit of money? So that is not a good news in the long run. Those low prices are going to eventually reduce the supply of oil, and that will drive the price up. Oh, you say, so we want prices really high. No, you don't. You get the price too high, $85, $90, $100 a barrel, and every landman and oil rigger and roughneck and his mother is going to be out there in the patch getting leases and punching wells. And all of those producers in the Middle East, they're going to stop abiding by their quotas, and they're going to turn their spigots up because they can get so much per barrel of the oil. And then what's going to happen is that you're going to, within a couple of months, you're going to have an oversupply of oil, and the floor will drop out on it. And then you'll have all of these riggers and all that, and places like that going out of business, going bankrupt, losing their homes, losing their property, their families. So we want it to stay stable in a range where it's profitable, but it's not so profitable that you're going to bring in idiots to start producing. So it's a balancing act in that market. What I'm trying to do for you is to convey to you that this is complex. Everything in my world of finance is complex, but it's not beyond you. You can choose to ignore it and stick with conspiracy theories and your opinions, or you can embrace it and begin to think in the right way to move forward as informed leaders of the world, as you will be. May God help us. Now, some of these, here's gold. Gold and silver are classic commodities, but they're not quite the same. Both of them are used in industrial production and in cosmetic jewelry, that kind of stuff. The problem is that gold is also infected by speculators. This rather forceful group of crazies who, whenever they think that the world is going to end or the economy is going to die, they start buying gold freakishly. And that drives the price of gold up and down. It has more volatility because you have these market participants who are not looking at the fundamental need for gold. They're looking at it as maybe, well, the world's ending, so I better get my gold and put it under my mattress kinds of folks. And they can pop those markets up and down. As you can see, gold is approaching $3,400 an ounce. Now, just last year, I was saying, well, we got to watch it if gold gets above $3,000 an ounce. And here we are, well above that now. And as you can see, there was a jump in the price of gold, and then it leveled off. Silver is not quite so susceptible to the speculators. More often, silver is being traded because of fundamental supply and demand dynamics in the markets for silver. That would be silver to be used in manufacturing, silver to be used in nice jewelry, silver to be used in plateware, dinnerware, things like that. So the silver market is calmer than the gold market. Now we go down to a couple of these other ones, like copper. Copper, that's a commodity. Copper, it makes the world go round. Copper pipes are everywhere, and it is a hugely important industrial metal. And so we kind of keep an eye on that because we sure don't want that stuff going through the roof, which it is right now. It's getting nasty high. It got a lot higher than it is now. Here's the problem. Copper is one of those things that we import a lot of it. So when we have leadership in Washington, D.C., that wants to slap tariffs from hell on everybody on earth, well, guess what the price of those the things that they sell us is going to do? It's going to go through the freaking roof. Here's a fun fact. Let's try this. If you were to just take a guess at what the biggest importer to the United States of oil is, what would you say?
Saudi Arabia?
Yes, you would say that. In fact, we could get hardly any oil from Saudi Arabia. The plurality of oil we get is from Canada, the one we're pissing off and calling all kinds of names. We really shouldn't be doing that because that's our major. Well, we'll just dig the oil in the ground. Yeah, you go out there in the patch and you look how big it is and how many oil rigs are already out there everywhere. Yeah, we're really going to get a lot more oil out of the ground here in the United States. But that's the thing is, we are interdependent. In these commodity prices you're seeing here, this isn't the United States. This is the world trading. All across the world, 24/7. These are global commodities. Anyway, enough of that. I'm going to take you, and I will talk a little later about currencies. And then I will also talk about bonds, because these are really important for us to know about. They are both important for us as individuals and households. They are also important to keep an eye on to know where the fate of our nation's economy is heading. And so those are important numbers that I want you to become familiar with in your developing understanding of finance and economics. Now, as I said, there will be days when I will oftentimes But while I'll always say, let's look at the market, most of the time I will also look at stocks and how to read the screens, as we call them, so that you know enough that you can make informed investment decisions on your own. And if I were to look at the screens here today, I'll have to just choose a stock. Anyone want to see something? And if you say Tesla, I will eat you alive. Anything?
Caterpillar.
What?
Caterpillar.
Cat? Okay. Now, I'm a big fan of cats. You'll come into my office, you'll see cat pictures all over the place. But not cat. Caterpillar. Well, there's a nice stock price. That costs you $420.25. Now, I want you to look at something. Do you see how that price is popping around? That's buy and sell orders. And whatever the clearing price is, as they yell at each other and their computers yell at each other, this is what you're seeing is the net effect of the balance of buy versus sell at any given moment. Someone just sold more than someone bought. Someone just bought more than someone sold. Someone bought more than someone sold there. You see what's going on here? But, yeah, this stock was up $4.23. I don't give a rat's ass about that. It was up 1.02%. That's what matters. This is a bullish day for CAT. Going down the line, the next thing that we're going to talk about. Yes, last night, Caterpillar, the last trade before the bell, ding, 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 that cleared at $416.09 for a share. It opened this morning down. So in other words, in the aftermarket and pre-market, the Caterpillar was actually, there were more sells than buys. And so when the market opened, liquidity got going and it cleared, the price opened below what it closed at yesterday. It opened this morning at $414.80. Let me make this bigger so you can see it a little better. Well, that sucked. Okay, I'll do it this way. We have to have their ads in there and all that kind of crap. Bid and ask. Now, the problem is that your book describes these two numbers from the broker-dealer's perspective. I am going to explain it to you from our perspective as the buyers and sellers. The bid is what you can sell a share of CAT at right now. So if I wanted to unload a share of CAT, I would sell it. I would get $420.68. The ask is what you can buy a share of CAT at right now, which is $420.86. So I have a bid-ask spread there of 18 cents. So in other words, if you buy a share of CAT, you are already in the hole 18 cents, because if you immediately sold it, you would sell it for 18 cents less than you bought it at. And you're saying, well, that's not fair. Like hell, it's not fair. That's how I make my money as a broker. I buy low and I sell high. Then that's a very tight bid-ask spread. Usually if there's a lot of trading in a stock, I don't need to make a lot of money on each transaction. I can have a narrow. But if trading is fairly thin, light, well, then I'm probably going to have a larger bid-ask spread, because every transaction I've got to make a few more pennies on. That's the basic explanation of it. Now, if you look at the volume today, sure enough, the average volume is how many shares have traded on the average day over the last 52 weeks, 365 days. This volume is how much traded today. And as you can see, the on-balance volume today is above the average. That is probably the best explanation of the tight bid-ask spread on it. Go down here. Market cap. You take the number of shares outstanding times the price per share. Caterpillar is a $196.878 billion company. Price per share times the number of shares outstanding. Now the beta. It is one of the most important measures in finance. I'll teach you all about it in the in following lectures. Know this. A beta below 1 is a relatively safe stock. A beta above 1 is a relatively risky stock. A beta below 1 is a relatively safe stock. We call it a conservative investment or a defensive investment. A beta above 1 is an aggressive investment, a risky investment. As you can see here, Caterpillar is not just risky, it's quite risky. You get up to 1.4 and you're getting into some pretty serious risk territory. Most investors should shy away from stocks with betas above 1.2, 1.3. You may think you're a risk taker, you're wild and crazy, but these stocks are as volatile as hell. They will be moving up and down every day like you'll feel like you're riding a horse in a rodeo. So this is a risky stock. Now the next measure is PE ratio. I'll get into it in its formula details when we get to financial ratios. You don't need that to know something about it. A price-to-earnings ratio much below 30 is an undervalued stock. Much above 30 is overvalued. Now, when I say overvalued and undervalued, what I'm talking about is relative to a theoretical intrinsic value. What is the stock really worth? If I look at the net present value of future expected cash flows, what is it really worth per share? That's intrinsic value. We will never see that in a market because markets live from moment to moment, from day to day. The intrinsic value is the underlying whisper of the stock. I take it like this, you, sir. I'm looking at you right now, you low-value person, you. And then you get a job for $200,000 a year, you overvalued person. I'm never going to see the underlying you. Not that I want to, you're probably gross. But the thing of it is, you understand that I won't see that underlying value. But we know it's there. You can't just say, well, there's no intrinsic value. Like hell there isn't. There is. But on any given day, a stock is going to be undervalued below that or overvalued above that. And this metric, that 30 that I'm talking about, now some in the industry, some of my good friends, they'd say, you shouldn't be telling that. It's like 35, 40. And others say, well, I get a little bit, say it's overvalued when it's above 20. So, you know, there's a difference of opinion. For the purposes of my work and for you while you're my students, think of 30 as about intrinsic value. It's not going to stay there for long, but as I can see here, CAT is undervalued. Even though it's an extremely risky stock, it's an undervalued stock. So that kind of gives you an idea of what I mean when I say I'm going to teach you how to look at stocks yourselves so that you don't have to worry about others and their charts and their inside whispers and all that. Look at the numbers. Data over dogma, as some of my friends say. Now, I'm going to take you here very quickly before I get a little bit of lecture done. I am going to take you to look at the company that is run by he of the cloven hoof, Tesla. The bid is $310.15. The ask is $324.41. That is an insanely wide bid-ask spread. That's a frickin' $14.26. That's insane. That's a really wide bid-ask spread on that stock. You see how wild? Look at this. Look at this over the last 1 year. That is enough to, if you're riding that wave, you need a barf bag. It's just whipping around up and down and up and down. Now let's look at some of the stuff about this stock. Let me take you down here to the, now EPS, it's profitable. In other words, that's profit per share. Let's look at the beta. Look at the beta. If you can't see it right off the bat, that's okay, but I'll ask you. Madam, what's the beta of that stock? Do you see it? I know, at first it's hard for you to know right where to look. As time goes on, you can your eyes will zero in a lot. Do you see it? Yeah. Is that risky or not risky?
It's very risky.
Yeah, that's risky AF. That's the technical term for it. I mean, that's freaking insane risk. I mean, you don't do that as an amateur investor. I'm all in on Tesla. Well, good for you. You also ride in rocket planes, even though you've never been trained in it. For God's sake, leave this to the professionals. Also, look at the price-earnings ratio. Is that undervalued or overvalued? Look at the P/E ratio. What do you see? Tell me.
It's overvalued.
Insanely overvalued. Remember I said 30? That's 30 times what? Like 30 times 8 or so? That no, 30 times 6? That is ridiculously overvalued. This is a stock that's screaming that it is going to, the price-earnings ratio, price divided by earnings, the price is going to have to fall massively to get that anywhere near 30. And even at that, it's still going to be a high-risk stock. In other words, this is a stock that will find its way back down. No, not today, tomorrow, next week, or even next year. It will find its way back. Just like comets, they go close to the sun, and they go way back out into the outer solar system. It will find its way back, and it will burn up down there. That's what we see in a stock like this. You don't have, well, I agree with Elon. He's my bud. I don't care. This is the same way with all investments. You don't buy because you feel. You don't buy because, well, my friend works there, and he says it's a great company. You don't buy on that. You buy on the analytics. And that's what in corporate America we're going to want out of you. We're going to want you to follow best practices. Because the last thing we want is someone to reinvent the wheel when we already have a wheel. Or to think outside the box when they have no idea what's actually already in the box. So that's why in the world that I teach you, it's all about the responsibility you have to something larger than just yourself. Eventually, in your household, you will have probably a family. You will have others you need to help take care of. In a corporate environment, you are there for the shareholders, not for yourself. You are there to maximize their wealth. That's why we follow the best practices. And when I teach those to you, I want you to take those out there into that world that you are going to lead instead of going out there with the idea that you can do whatever you feel like doing and it's going to be okay. I can't stand it. I'm going to have to show you one here. No. Should I show that to you? Yeah, I'll show it to you. No, by the way, market cap. The market cap is, where the hell is it in this one? Market cap. Why do they keep doing this? I don't want to see that. Market cap of this one. There it is. $1.046 trillion. That's one company has a value by the market of more than $1 trillion. Let me take you on a little journey here just for a minute. Apple. All I'm going to do is look at its market cap. $3.354 trillion. There's two companies and we're getting close to $5 trillion. Let's keep going. Let's look at Amazon, AMZN. Amazon's market cap, $2.387 trillion. Okay, we're moving on $7 trillion. Of total market cap. Let's look at Microsoft, MSFT. Let's see what it's a smaller one. Market, well, no, it's not. $3.759 trillion. It jumped a lot last couple of days. We're working on $10 trillion in just a handful of companies. Now you get that, expand that, keep going on that, and eventually you'll realize something. How much are you worth?
We don't put a price on it.
Oh, sure you can. We have to. And I mean, okay, there's liquidated price. That says what happens if we just sell you at fire sale. In your case, if I were to put you into a blender and then separate out and get all the parts of you, I'd probably get about $5.25. Now, if I were to consider the net present value of your future expected earnings and bring those back to the present, maybe somewhere between $4 and $10 million. But that's nothing compared to this. You take those 500 companies and then you compare those to the value of everyone in the world. And those 500 companies are just overwhelmingly worth more than everyone in the world. Even taking the present value of all of our future expected earnings, we are worth little to nothing compared to these giants of the earth. And that's why when I give you the knowledge that I give you, I don't give you this knowledge so that you can go out there, I'm important, I'm going to take the world. Barney said that I'm special just the way I am. No, we're not. This is what is special. This is what controls the world. Not us. Not even a little bit. And so keep that in mind as I go through this course. I'm teaching you not how to be the engine. You have to learn how to master the engine, because these are the engine of production in the country and in the world. Keep that in mind, and I will show you one more. The largest company on earth, and I'll bet you don't know what it is. I'll bet you've never even heard of it. Saudi, what am I wanting? Not dairy and foodstuffs. Saudi oil, oil and gas. So I'm not going to be able to do it. Aramco. I might not be able to remember it. Oil company, there it is. It's only $23.88 a share. Let's look at its market cap. Hello Kitty. $5.8 trillion, the largest company on earth. So when you look at this company and you think, well, this is a benign player, this is okay, surely the owners, the inside power brokers of the Saudi family who run this company, they have all the best intentions in the world. They would never use this extraordinary wealth and control of the world economy to do anything that would be adverse to our interest. Yes, of course. Notice also the beta. A beta of zero means that it has no risk. It has, so in other words, like a treasury bill has no risk. It's a risk-free instrument. A beta of one is the market risk. We have a company that is so, the beta is so low that basically there's no risk in investing in it whatsoever. That's just how powerful this company is. Notice that its PE ratio, it's undervalued right now. So it pays a decent dividend, and it's only $28 a share, $23 a share. In a situation like that, you couldn't say no to an investment like that. No one's ever going to touch this company. This company is essentially immune to the risks of the world. And it is undervalued right now. And so, if you're thinking of investments and you're afraid of risk, this is the kind of investments that you would want. I think I'm tired of you. I'm so over you today. Go home.